Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Amy Williamson, an unusual lady, perhaps in some respects, because she's very interested in the paranormal, particularly ghost hunting, and she actually teaches others how to involve themselves in it, to do it the correct way. She's dedicated at the moment to producing a documentary, which is called Haunted Hillside, and she's working on a new book at the moment. So I'm sure she's got some very interesting stories to tell us. Are you there, Amy?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very nice to have you on the program. Something I must ask you first, having been onto your website, which is a very excellent one, there's lots to see on there, and I've looked at some of your videos. Are you, by any chance, this beautiful blonde woman that's somewhere between Doris Day and Marilyn Monroe?
Sure, yes.
Oh, you admit to it. Oh, that's very good, okay. Well, I thought to myself, that should at least get a few thousand hits on your website. Should improve your status. Right.
I didn't understand what you just said.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. I was just saying that that sort of build-up should get you at least a few thousand hits on your website.
Oh, thank you. You're just looking out for me.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Now, I wondered where your interest started, and you're obviously going to tell our listeners about that, but I suspected, and you would tell me if I'm wrong or not, that you probably had a paranormal experience when you were young, or possibly your mother used to read you horror stories to get you to go off to sleep.
Well, I have a theory about how people get into the paranormal. The first one is, like you said, had a paranormal experience growing up, couldn't explain why, you know, the cupboards opened or the water turned on or we saw a full-body apparition. And then the second person is the one that, for unknown reasons, is very interested in the paranormal, reads a lot of ghost stories, likes to tell ghost stories, you know, when girls get together for their sleepovers, you know, would do the where you would try to lift people your fingers, and that was me. I've always been interested in the paranormal, and I'm not sure why. I just want to know the unknown and find the answers to it. So that would be me, number two.
Well, that's certainly one way of finding out about the unknown. Now, you're very much involved in what happens in the Hillsdale area. Tell us about that area. Does it actually have a history of hauntings? Is it a bit unusual?
Yeah, it is an unusual area. It was actually an area that was heavily populated by the Native American Indians. They were relocated, and there's burial grounds all over the place here. There's one that we had been invited to because the Native Americans had recently reclaimed the land, and there was some ghostly happenings going on, and they asked us to come out and, you know, interview them and document it. And hopefully this spring we'll be invited back out because it's last fall. So, yeah, it's not necessarily even the homes that are haunted. It's the land as well.
Right. The very mention of the burial sites would suggest, as I believe the Indians believe, that their spirits are still there. Have you actually had an investigation of hauntings of that type or spirit apparitions or whatever?
Well, the Native Americans that we spoke to explained to us that when they were relocated, they had warriors that would stay back and guard the burial grounds. And so they believe that warriors are still guarding the burial ground even in the afterlife.
Right. Okay, so you haven't directly investigated those type of happenings then, because what I wanted to ask you is to find out how you view these things. Do you actually believe that the ghosts are earthbound spirits?
I think that there are different types of spirits. They're the kind that, for whatever reason, when they cross over, don't want to go on to the afterlife. Maybe they lived a poor life and they're afraid of what's going to happen to them. They, you know, maybe they were evil, bad, whatever. And then there's the ones that are confused, like when it's a traumatic accident or it's a child, they don't really know what's happened to them and they don't know what to do next.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the demons that I believe that were never human to begin with.
Right. Okay. In the course of your work, then, have you been able to communicate with these spirits that didn't want to leave the earth? And in doing that, can you actually redirect them to the light, as some researchers do?
Yes, I do believe. There are some paranormal investigators out there that are just in it to get evidence to prove or disprove a haunting. But we are a group that goes in, and if it's a troubling haunting for the homeowner, we do try to help them rid the house of the ghost, and we do that by trying to help the ghost to cross over. We also do it by telling the homeowners to empower their own selves and let them know that it's their home and they're not, you know, the ghost isn't welcome there.
Right, yes. I think in my own experience, I've heard that type of work called rescue work. There are some people that specifically aim to find what they probably call the lost souls. Are you always able to do something with the ghosts that you find, or are some possibly just apparitions that you can't communicate with at all?
Well, there's different kinds of hauntings, and there's the residual hauntings that it's just a moment in time that's been captured, and it'll replay itself over and over again. It's not aware of you. It's just kind of like a tape recording that keeps playing itself over and over again. And then there's the actual intelligent hauntings that interact with you, seem very aware that you're around, and you know that they're aware that they're around. And then there's the other type of haunting that is commonly known as the poltergeist haunting, and it has nothing to do with the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Poltergeist haunting has to do with energy that comes from the people living in the home. It manifests into a type of haunting-like activity where things go flying across the room. It's like a violent type of thing.
Right.
So you can't do anything with the residual haunting. It's just what it is. And you can try to connect and contact the intelligent haunting, but right now we're working on a case where the woman just loves her ghost. She doesn't want anything done with her ghost. So we're just strictly to try to help her find out who's there with her.
Right, yeah, that's interesting. It's nice to know that some people aren't actually frightened, isn't it?
Yeah, she loves her ghost, and she feels connected and protected by them, and it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah. I think the ones you like go bump in the night, don't they? Is that true? you like the active ones, yeah?
Did you say the ones I like go bump in the night?
Yeah. I reckon so. Well, it gives you something to find, doesn't it? And to be serious here, if you're in a location where there seems to be some ghostly activity, the presence of it confirmed by sort of doors opening and shutting and feet apparently running up the stairs when there is no one there gives you something to really get your teeth into, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one that we have now where the woman likes her hauntings, there's a little boy that puts on the stairs and he runs up and down and makes a lot of noise, and she sometimes has to tell him to, you know, quiet it down because her little girls are sleeping, and he will stop.
I love it. Now, obviously, a lot of our listeners, like myself, have seen documentaries about sort of what you might call ghost hunting, and they appear to have these pieces of equipment that can pick up the changes in the temperature and so forth. What is it you actually use in the course of checking out your sort of hauntings?
Well, we have multiple DVD cameras that we use. We have cameras that are both both digital and film. We have voice recorders that are digital. We use EMF detectors, which picks up the electromagnetic field, because it's believed that a ghost will pull energy and magnetic fields in order to materialize. So it's high spikes. We can rule out whether it's like a light socket or an electrical source. And if there's not anything like that around, then we can train our cameras right on that spot. We also use dowsing rods, and I use a psychic medium on my team. Some teams don't believe in that. They just want to be strictly scientific. However, I think that we're working in an area that is unknown, so I like to call in all avenues.
Right.
I know some groups have the thermal imaging camera.
Oh, yes,
it's very expensive, and we don't have that. But I am actually trying to write a few grants to get a little bit more equipment for our team, because we do not charge for our investigations. We do it as a service to people that need us.
Yeah. Does infrared ray photography reveal these presences, or doesn't that come into it?
Infrared ray? Are you talking about motion detection?
Well, I seem to have the idea in my mind that somehow they use these infrared ray pieces of equipment for detecting or photographing the ghost. Am I wrong on that?
Oh, yeah, the infrared photography. We do have a photographer on our team that has tried that. I don't know much about infrared, so I would have to defer you to him. If I don't know the answer to a question, I don't try to act like I do. I do try to get the answer, but I don't have an answer for that.
Right, okay. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier, amongst other things, about finding sort of ghostly things that you called demons. Now, where do these originate from? I mean, are they human or what?
I don't believe that demons are human. Just like there's good in the world, I believe that there's bad in the world, and there are entities that, you know, they want to possess the human body, and that's their main goal. Now, a lot of people think that it's like The Exorcist, and, you know, their head spins around and they spit out pea green soup, that kind of stuff. But that's not what really happens. What they really do is they go after your emotions. They play with your emotional state. They make you angry. They make you sad. They make you, you know, when you're in those kind of states, then that makes you maybe turn to alcohol or drugs, and they try to roll your body down into a state where they can possess it, and then they just ride you like a horse until you die.
Right, yeah. My own words to that would seem to suggest that you're talking about entities that have passed over that are of a very low negative state that are still very close to the earth, and they delight in doing these sort of things that you describe. So you're really talking of entities that carry out sort of what you would call demonic behavior. Would that be a fair description?
Well, I don't believe that's human to begin with.
No, I see, right, yeah. Because what makes me think of that is, with my own interest, is that it is said that there are astral regions where some people go when they pass over, but they're so low in vibration that they've really hardly left the earth. And they're normally the people, as I said, that are somewhat negative, and they are prone to do that type of thing. You know, to try to get into someone's body or to lead them into something perhaps that they wouldn't otherwise do.
Yeah, I do think that there are those people that were, if you were a crappy person in life, then we cross over, it doesn't suddenly make you all beauty, love, and light. Yeah,
right,
I think there are those people, but I don't think that those are the ones that actually possess the bodies. They might mess with you, they might be violent, but they're certainly not the ones that attack you. Well, I mean, they are the ones that would maybe hit you, but they're not the ones that, you know, the incubus and the succubus and those type of entities that truly want to ravish you and take complete control over you.
Right. Because I have read in my time some stories about these type of entities that are more able to take over a person's sort of personality or their body when they become, say, in some instances, drunk or they're on drugs. It seems that it's easier for these beings to get inside a person and sort of literally take them over. Do you give any credence to that idea?
I do. I did spend a case where the son had been seeing ghosts his whole life, and it scared him. Well, as he grew older, he started drinking and doing drugs, and he was still in the same house. He was seeing these entities, and he became violent. His drug abuse just increased. His alcoholism increased. And when the family contacted me, he was on his way into rehab. And I was very concerned for him because, one, conventional medicine really doesn't believe too much or put too much credit into the paranormal realm. So I was very worried that they were going to think that he was hallucinating, seeing these things, maybe put a diagnosis on him that, you know, prior to the alcoholism and the drug abuse that didn't exist. So I just wanted the family to be supportive because they had witnessed it as well. So I told them it was really important that you make sure and let the medical facility know that you have experienced these things as well.
Yeah, yeah. Now, again, through having visited your website, I noticed that you also include, I think I got this right, amongst your interests, UFOs. Now, does that mean that the type of equipment you're using to pick up the presence of ghosts also picks up the presence, say, of a UFO if it's in the area?
We did a UFO investigation because in the Hillsdale area in the 60s, because we're a small, sleepy college town, and Hillsdale College is the name of the college in our town, and there were some co-eds that claimed to have seen a UFO out past their dormitory. Well, that was reported, and Time magazine picked it up. Well, the official government census on it was that it was swamp gas. So we had a ufologist come out and kind of talk about the story and walk us through it and show us what actually happened. He explained that we're on a fault line. We didn't do too much as far as investigation. It was more of a, I guess you could say, just a reenactment.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, do you believe in UFOs yourself? I suppose you must do in that case.
I think I do believe in extraterrestrial beings. We're here, and it's just, I guess my mind is more open, and I think, well, how could we just think that there's only beings on this planet when there is just so many planets out there and universes? And so, yes, I will make the argument that I do believe in UFOs. Have I ever seen a UFO? No. Have I ever had an alien experience? Perhaps. Something did happen to me after an investigation. We had been on an investigation where the man reported his home to be haunted, as well as aliens flying, UFOs flying over his home. About 2 weeks later, I woke up on a Saturday night about midnight to see something standing at the end of my bed. I had never seen anything like this before. It looked like a big lizard. Actually, I told my ufologist friend, I said it looked like a chupacabra, but only, like, tall. And he's like, was it reptile in nature? And I'm like, yes, it was. And he goes, oh, dear, those are the worst kind. And I'm like, what do you mean? And but when I had seen it, I, like, looked at it. It looked at me. It seemed kind of startled. I blinked my eyes, and it was gone. I thought maybe it was me doing mind matrix, you know, like where your mind is just trying to make sense out of objects. Maybe something was, you know, there in the dark that I, you know, was trying to make into something. So I rolled over and I turned on the radio. The radio was coming this dialect that I'd never heard before, but I could tell it was repeating the signal. It was, and that kept going on until I shut the radio off. So I turned the TV on and tried to go back to sleep. And then late when I was telling my friend about it, he was like, "Oh dear, those reptilians are the worst kind." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, they're the more angry type." And so it's never happened again. Was it following me from an investigation? Maybe. Maybe it just wanted to know what I was doing up there. I don't know. UFOs scare me. I really, I do talk about it. I am interested in it. But I can tell you this, UFOs scare me, and the paranormal doesn't. I feel like we have more control over the paranormal than we do over the UFOs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose you're experiencing what a lot of people do about various things, including your own interests. What you don't really understand leaves you a little bit fearful, doesn't it? But I'd like to, if I may, in view of my own experience, put your mind at rest to some extent and tell you that whilst the reptilians seem to have taken a lot of blame for the negativity in this universe, there are other types that are perfectly kind and loving. Not every reptilian is of that nature. So I think you have to be guided by your intuition if you have an experience like yourself. If it didn't convey any fear to you or make you feel uneasy, I suspect it was sort of a benign being. So there you are.
Yeah, it really didn't scare me, which everyone, when I told the story, they're like, "Well, you know, there would have been a hole in the door with my shape in it, you know, if it happened to me." But it didn't frighten me. It just confused me. And I actually spoke to, we do a show called Parawomen Radio, and we brought on Elaine Douglas, who is a MUFON director in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, dear Amy, I think you need to have a regression." Well, honestly, I don't want to do that because I actually truthfully don't want to know if I had been abducted or if that was just the only encounter, because I just want to know.
No, no. Well, I think abductions mostly seem to be identified with someone when they have an experience perhaps like yours, but also have a period of missing time. Often there is a sort of break in your memory and you can't recall having sort of had the experience. But if you don't want to know, obviously there will be a block put there by yourself anyway. Now,
well, I was sleeping, there's no really missing time. I went to bed about 9. I woke up at midnight with this thing there,
and then
I went back to sleep.
I'm sure that would frighten most people, particularly if it was their first experience of seeing something like that in their room, particularly in the night. I mean, it must be quite a surprise, if not a shock.
Well, it was, but I like I said, oddly enough, didn't frighten me. Disturb me until after I talked to some people, because I didn't even know it was UFO in nature. I was thinking more demonic because of the investigation we had been on. I knew that there was a UFO thing, but I was thinking on a totally another. I was thinking like the paranormal ghostly thing. I didn't know about reptilian until I'd only read about greys.
Yes. Well, the greys are certainly more associated with the abductions. Now, do you come across ghostly animals?
That's funny you ask that. That is, when I was a little girl, when I was born, they got a little poodle at the same time, and we grew up together. And when I was like 11 or 12, we had to have her put to sleep because she had some issues. I don't remember at the time what they were, but I know that this was the first true death that I ever experienced, and I cried, and I cried, and I was devastated by this. Well, one night, we had hardwood floors, and she always had long fingernails. I heard her, like, go clippity-clappity down the hallway, and I saw this shadow kind of like coming across the floor, and I kept hearing the clippity-clappity, and then her jump, and she landed onto my bed, but there was nothing there except an indentation.
Right.
So I do believe in animals and ghostly.
Yes, yes. I have a friend who's an excellent psychic, and their family pet cat, I had a dog as well actually, but their cat, he told me, often comes and gets on his bed at night time. I mean, he doesn't see it there, but like you, he senses that it's there, and he feels the sort of bed go down when it lays itself down.
I think it's nice. We had a pet psychic on our radio show, and I do believe that they try to communicate with us. And so, you know, when they cross over, why wouldn't, you know, that's where they truly felt loved. And, you know, that's why, another reason why when spirits cross over, they stay, they go to a place where they felt really loved and happy.
Yes.
And that's where they want to be.
Absolutely, yes. I had an experience once which quite frightened me on this same subject. I was in bed and it was dark, and I distinctly felt an animal, I don't know what on earth it was, run across the back of the bed, across the pillows. And I can tell you, I was under those sheets in a split second. It was quite frightening because it was the suddenness of it. But there we are. Maybe that was a cat coming back to visit me. My family have always had cats, so we've got a few old ones somewhere in Siret. Now,
maybe. Who knows? I think that when spirits manifest, they don't always manifest in whole shapes. I know that from talking to some demonologist friends, that is actually the way that the universe lets you know that it is not of human nature. There's always a part of it missing, like you only see from the head up, or they're disembodied somehow.
Right. Now, what I'm dying to know about is this documentary that you're making. I notice you're asking for someone to work with you who's prepared to be a film editor for you. Have you found that person yet?
No, we've gotten leads. I've talked to some people. The problem that they always say is, well, I'm in another state. So I have to find someone that's in the Michigan area that wants to do it. Of course, I don't have, we're a low-budget movie, so it would be for credit and a percentage of the film.
Yeah.
You know, because we will be going around to conventions and film festivals and showing it and selling copies of it. Is it going to make it in the movie theaters? Doubtful. But it will be on DVD.
That's fine.
Now we've
mentioned it. Well, you never know your luck, do you? Now we've mentioned it. So someone may be listening in who lives around that area who could help you. Tell me and the listeners about this documentary. I mean, how long have you been making it, and what is the object of it?
Well, our object is actually to show a person who is at the bare bottom bones of, you know, investigation, learning how to do it, getting a group started, going out and doing investigations. And from that documentary, actually, a book is going to be spun off, and we're going to, actually put it into our book, our investigations, and then they'll be able to, if they want to have the DVD, actually see us doing some of the investigations.
Yes. Right, that's nice, right? So the documentary is something you're adding to all the time, is it?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah?
I didn't hear what your question was.
Oh, you didn't? No. I'm still talking about the documentary. I was asking if it's an ongoing thing that you're adding to the whole time.
Oh, no. I'd say we're pretty much done with this phase of the documentary. We're looking for an editor, but the group is still going. I'm still filming us doing it, so if you know, if there's a haunted Hilldale too, great. If there's a haunted Michigan, I might want to expand. We're right actually on the Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana border. And we had an earthquake here today.
Did you? Gracious.
Yes, in the Midwest there was an earthquake.
Oh, was it a 9 or 1 or?
It originated in Illinois and it was a 5.4.
Oh, well, that's one you can feel, isn't it?
Yes. We actually, there's a funny story, because I do the paranormal investigation, and my husband knows it, he's always worried that I'm going to bring something back with me. And, you know, and I am conscious of that. When I leave an investigation, I say, you stay here, you're not allowed to come with me. You know, I do the whole protection thing. Well, he works nights, and the earthquake happened about 5:30. He had just gotten home and was getting into bed, and the bed started shaking. Well, you know, in all those scary movies, that's what starts first, is the bed starts shaking, you know. He jumps out of bed, and he goes, what is that? Like, I had created it somehow, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe an earthquake?
Yeah.
And indeed it was.
Well, at least you're safe and sound from that. Now,
yeah.
Are you actually a co-founder of the League of Extraordinary Paranormal Women, and can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, I'm actually the founder, and I have Christy Robinette and Shannon Overland. They are the co-founders. When I got into the paranormal, I noticed that men were getting a lot of attention. They were running the groups, they were getting the interviews, they were getting the TV show. But there were a lot of women out there, too, doing things in the paranormal. And by paranormal, I don't mean, like, just strictly ghostly and UFO and cryptozoology. I'm talking about, like, women that, you know, act in horror movies, writers, artists, women that do things that just are not of the norm. And I had an idea of creating a league that would spotlight and focus women in the paranormal, and we do that like through conferences, radio, TV, writing, press, and all that. So that's how the league spun off and began.
That's very nice. So following on to that, obviously comes the Para Women Radio.
Yes. Para Women Radio was a spinoff of the league. We each Thursday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. we talk to two women a night, and we interview them on Blog Talk Radio. We have them picked up by a few FM stations, but they're in the UK, so we're always looking for a third set one to pick us up, or even a satellite station would be fantastic. But we have been the honor of talking to a lot of women in the paranormal, and actually, it's really helped me to meet new people, to read new books, to learn new things. It's been so fulfilling for me that I can't say enough about the Women Radio.
Right. Now, there's very intriguing subject on your website, which I didn't actually look into, so I'd be delighted to know what it's all about. This is the Nightmare Cinema, and you talk of your character, Dr. Jacqueline Hyde. Good name.
Yeah, Nightmare Cinema is in the old horror post tradition, where you show a bad B horror movie, and in between you do skits. You know, Elvira did it, Count Scary did it, Sir Grace Gasly did it, The Ghoul did it. And actually there's a large group of people that are getting back into it. There's a whole network on the internet of horror host movie people. And our show is called Nightmare Cinema, and Wolfman Mac hosts it with his sidekick, Boney Bob. And then my character is Dr. Jacqueline Hyde. I'm a split personality. So I do actual movie reviews that are horror and sci-fi movies that are out in the theaters. A part of me loves it, and then the other part hates it and wants you to go away because I'm trying to take over the world with my movie.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, that's a very good role there. Yeah, I gather you also like to direct movies and write scripts. Have you done any work on that side as well?
Yeah, I'm working on my first script with actually one of the writers of Nightmare Cinema. When I started acting on Nightmare Cinema, I gave Noelle Zine to Wolfen and Mac, and she has become a writer on that show. And we are working on, it's kind of our first, you would think I would be doing horror, and I do have a horror script in mind, but I'm actually working on, it's kind of like along the lines of Napoleon Dynamite. It's like an oddball comedy with dry sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Now, amongst the various things I read about, there was something that was talking about having contests. I think that was in connection with the haunting. Now, what is all that about?
A contest? We don't have any contests going on right now.
No.
We did have a logo contest, and the person that won that got a T-shirt. We had another contest, but I don't remember what that was. We have them periodically where we give out, you know, Haunted Hillsdale or League of Extraordinary Paranormal gear.
Right. Okay. Now, I also noticed on your website where you gave a few dates for events that are coming up. Yeah, you mentioned something on there that I've never heard of before, so I'd like you to speak about that. And that is Fairy Day, which you give us June the 24th.
Those actually aren't dates of events that we're doing. I just, personally, I like fairies and gnomes, so
yeah.
I put that up there. You know how they have all these silly days?
Yeah.
There's a holiday for every day. I just put that
yeah.
up there because I love fairies. I do have some dates coming up for some classes that I'm doing and some seminars in July. I will be at Black Hawk teaching a class, and that's in Richland, Michigan, on the 19th. I'll be teaching a class on, I make jewelry. So I've been making pendulums, so I'll be doing a class on pendulums. We'll actually make a pendulum, and you'll learn how to use it, how to clean it, how to program it, board work, how to use it in the paranormal.
Right. Now, I've tried using pendulums and dowsing rods myself with a fair degree of success. When you talk of pendulums, are you talking about the wooden ones?
Talking about what ones?
Wooden. Ones made of wood.
Wooden ones. No,
pendulums, yeah.
Mine are made of crystal and stone.
Oh, crystal, right, yeah.
Yes, and I make pocket pendulums, so they're easy to carry around. They're smaller. Because when you're doing work with pendulums, you want to ask questions, and you don't want to have to wait for it to stop. And
right.
when you have a big one, it swings wider. And when you have a little one, it swings smaller. So it's quicker to get stopped to get to the next question. I also do them for women where they can wear them as bracelets so that you always have it with you. Or you can take it off. You take the crystal off and wear it as a necklace. So I do different things, and you design your own. And if you don't know what you want to make, then I have fairy goddess cards, fairy cards, and animal totem cards that we could pull and just work from there.
Yes, yes. So are people using these pendulums for any reason of their own, or do you teach the use of it as far as locating or speaking with the ghosts or spirits?
Yeah, I cover a paranormal segment and how you can use it in a paranormal investigation. I also talk about how you can do it to locate anything in your house. We talk about, if you want to plant a garden, and you don't know what plants you want to plant, you could go to a nursery and put your pendulum over a plant and decide if this is it. I also teach you how to make a board that has letters and numbers or letter or years or directions, whatever you want to put on it, in whichever way the pendulum swings, you can go from there.
I would guess that when you're using a pendulum, the critical factor is how you phrase the question that you're asking the pendulum to answer, is it not? Should
Correct.
It be a question that gives you a yes or no answer?
You have to be pretty specific with a pendulum. Don't leave it broad and open because that leaves a lot of room for error. You know, so be very specific. If you're going to do a yes or no, if you're not going to use a board, then yes or no is the way to go. If you're going to use a board, then you could put letters out, and if it swings towards that letter, then you write down that letter, you know, and you do it that way.
That would seem to be quite a long way round, but it would be very positive, I suppose. Now, you apparently teach people how to communicate with spirits, but what is your approach on that?
Well, I've had a lot of people approach me and want to know how do you become a paranormal investigator? How do you start a group? How do you get investigations? Those type of questions. And I have created a class where I tell them how I did it. I never say, like, this is just what I believe in. If you want to believe in something else, you know, I don't bemoan you. I don't begrudge you. I think that we're all just people trying to find out truth, living a human experience. And so I just come strictly from how I started, what my practices are, what I think that you should or shouldn't do. There's a lot of things that you would think about when you go out on a paranormal investigation, like don't wear perfume. Why? Well, because that's a way that ghosts can manifest to you. They can do it through your olfactories.
Right.
You know, just like common sense things. Don't, you know, go into, in Michigan there's a law where you can't go into a cemetery after sunset. Well,
unless
you might not know that. Yes, unless it's posted somewhere else, you cannot go into a cemetery after sunset. You know, like things like that, common sense things that you might not know about.
Yeah.
I tell them how, what you need to find out the rules and the laws of your state. And just, you know, I go into those kind of things.
Right.
What equipment I think you should use, what you know, is necessary, you know, that kind of stuff.
Now, moving on to the next point there, I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in contacting their spirit guides. Do you have any special way of doing that?
We use a psychic when we go on our investigations. I think the only way that you really can contact your spirit guides is by meditation. I am a big meditator. To try automatic readings, but just kind of like the more I do the paranormal, the more I am aware of things that maybe others aren't. I'm more sensitive. It opens you up to more things. So I think that you definitely need to open up and ask them to come to you. And they might not, you know, like sit in front of you and say, hi, my name is such and such. You know, they might come to you in a form of a message out in the universe. I think the universe speaks to you in ways that you understand. For me, it's animals. When I see animals, I learn messages from them. But I think if you ask them, you know, who are you, can you please show yourself to me, and then be aware of your surroundings, what's happening, and some, if anything out of the unusual happens, you know, that may be your guide trying to tell you, hey, I'm here.
Yes, I think it's an intuitive feeling, isn't it, when you feel that there is someone around you, and you're, as you say, meditation is the way to do it, to quieten yourself down, to possibly make that contact. Are you mediumistic?
They all say I am, but I think, it's, for me, I wasn't born this way. The more meditation I do, the more I do the paranormal, the more open I become and the more I know. I have an inner knowing, but can I see things? No. Can I feel things? Yeah. I can pick up feelings very easily, and I'm very, like, if we went into an investigation, and I instantly got a backache. Well, we found out that the woman had a sore back. So, yeah, I pick up feelings, but do I know why I'm picking up the feelings? No.
Yeah. Right. I suspect, in view of the type of things you're interested in, you probably have a belief in reincarnation. But does that fit into your thinking?
Yes, I definitely believe in reincarnation.
You do, yes. So these spirits that may be involved in the hauntings, then you probably sometimes identify as ones who might have been around a long, long time ago, but for some reason are earthbound in a certain location.
Yeah, I think, like I said before, I think that they're earthbound for a number of reasons. They might actually like where they are. They might be afraid of what's out there. They're confused and they don't know where they are. Or maybe they're waiting for someone. I've heard of, like, cases where a grandparent, the grandfather passes away, haunts the house until the grandmother dies, and then they're both gone.
Yeah.
I actually had a funny story where a friend of mine said that her grandfather haunted the house. Then when the grandmother died, her daughter said, "Geez, I hope they're both not going to stay here now." Well, they didn't. They went all, they crossed over together.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're waiting for their loved one to pass over.
Oh.
They're actually their guide, their angel, whatever, spirit guide, whatever you want to call them, until they cross over, and then they go over with them.
Yes, I can understand that. That seems to make quite good sense. Now, we haven't reached quite the end of the program, but I have another 5 minutes, and I do require a minute or two at the end to tell our listeners who my guest will be next week. Now, would you like to take any time up in the next 2 or 3 minutes telling our listeners your website addresses or any other information that you'd like to pass on?
Sure. If you want to visit me on the World Wide Web, all you have to do is go to www.hauntedhillsdale.com. If you want to email me, you can email me at hauntedhillsdale@comcast.net. And if you want to listen to our Parawoman show, all you have to do is go to www.blogtalkradio.com and then just type in Parawoman Radio. And if you're interested in Nightmare Cinema, you can go to www.nightmarecinema.com. And I'm also on MySpace, but it's not letting me put my MySpace page. I believe it's, you know, MySpace. I'm a Haunted Hillsdale on MySpace, so if you just type in Haunted Hillsdale, we'll come up.
Yes, I've had a look on those. They're quite good. I think you set out to scare people. Would I be right?
Can I tell you really quick? We did have something exciting happen to us, and we're opening up a message board, and we actually are doing that on it's a network for women in horror. So they actually are women that do horror movies, and they've been, like, Angelina Jolie's been interviewed, Winona Ryder, a number of famous people, and that is at pretty/girls.net.
Right. Perhaps you could repeat that one again.
It's www.pretty/girls.net.
.net, yes. Okay, fine. I hope this all leads to your getting some inquiries. When you mention that you do workshops and seminars, are they all in Michigan, or do you tour around the country at all?
Actually, I got that website wrong. I'm sorry. It's www.katie/gary.net. Yes, we actually were doing one in Ohio at a haunted bed and breakfast, June 29th, I believe it is. All my dates are on my Haunted Hillsdale site, or my MySpace site, where I'm going to be. We're doing some in Michigan. We're looking at one in Indiana, a bed and breakfast. And we're actually planning our own. We do one every year. Sometimes we've talked about doing more, but we're definitely doing one this fall. And we're actually looking at a possible haunted castle or a haunted museum for our next conference for the League of Extraordinary Paranormal Women, put on by them. But we are also been invited to different conferences that we'll be at. And that's at my Haunted Hillsdale, my sixth site.
Oh, you're quite a busy lady, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And I have a day job.
Yeah.
I'm a social worker.
You've got 10 seconds to answer this question. Are you married?
Yes, I am. And my husband puts up with my paranormal endeavors, and I love him for it.
Yeah. Well, I wondered where he fitted in, you see. He might not have followed your interests.
Well, he comes along with me.
Oh, don't do that,
right. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to say thank you very much for coming onto the program now, Amy. The time has absolutely sped by. It's been a very intriguing and interesting interview with you. Thank you very much for coming on to it.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been very nice. So I'll announce to my listeners next week's guest, who will be Mari Jones. She's the author of a book called Looking for God in All the Wrong Places, which was named the best religious come spiritual book of 2003 by RebeccaReads.com. She's contributed to over 36 inspirational gift books for Publications International and New Seasons, and she has also written and produced several nationally distributed video projects. So she's quite an active person. She's an ordained New Thought minister and pastoral counselor, currently living in San Marcos, California. She loves cats, apparently, and she loves books. So I hope you'll be with me next week. I've enjoyed today's program. So thank you very much. God bless you all.